we're not here to talk about Rav Avadia. That's happening as we speak elsewhere in Yerushalayim. But the shiur this evening is dedicated to Le'ilui Nishmoso. After all the Torah that he gave to his generation, I think he deserves at least one shiur back. The Parsha of Lech Lecha begins, of course, with Avram being told, Lech Lecha, Mi'artzecha, Mi'moladetecha, he's told to go to, well, destination unknown, El Ha'aretz, Asher Ar'ekha. And, of course, very well known, the first Rashi of the Parsha always has a special mazel. And Rashi comments on the words Lech Lecha. It doesn't just mean go, but Rashi says it's Lahana'osecha, Ulutovosecha, for your benefit, for your good. V'sham esecha l'goy gadol, there I will make you into a great nation. V'kan iatazoche l'banim, whereas here you will not merit sons, so it will be good for you over there. V'od, and furthermore, she'odia tivacha ba'olam, I will make your nature known to the world. That's what will happen over there. So great things are waiting for you over there. Nothing much is happening for you over here, so you should move. And what's interesting is, before we get into the details of the Rashi itself, after promises like that, one has to wonder, I mean, who wouldn't go? This is rated as the first of the 10 Nisyonos of Avram. Nisyonos are difficult circumstances. One's not sure how to proceed. Well, I think one should be quite sure how to proceed here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself has told you, everything good will happen to you over there, nothing good is happening to you here, so you should go. So the Rashi almost takes the Nisayon out of the Lech Lecha. And that's a question that the Tur has already dealt with and many Mefarshim deal with after him. But we should note that Rashi, it's only two lines, but Rashi said a lot. He seems to have said actually four things. Commenting on the words Lech Lecha, Rashi says, Lahana Osecha, for your benefit. Number two, Letov Osecha, which seems to be something else. Number three, Rashi makes mention of, and there I will make you into a great nation. Where does that fit in? And finally, Odia Tivacha Ba'olam. I will make your nature known to the world. And that's four things. Interestingly, the most difficult of these four things is the third one, where Rashi says, there I will make you into a great nation. What's difficult about this phrase in Rashi? These words are actually the beginning of the next pasuk. Ve'esecha l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. Rashi's job is to give us commentary on the psukim, not to give us previews for upcoming psukim. In other words, these words, ve'esecha l'goy gadol, I don't need Rashi to tell me them, because they're actually the very words that I would have been reading if Rashi had already finished. Because they're the beginning of the next pasuk. So what exactly is the shape of this comment of Rashi? But the truth of the matter is, although it looks like Rashi is saying four things, Rashi is in reality saying two things and then explaining them. The two things are, lahana osecha, ulatov osecha, for your benefit and for your good. The question is, what is the difference between those two things? I mean, they both sound positive. Benefit sounds positive. Good sounds positive. So why are they not the same thing? What divides them? What distinguishes them? And the Mefarshim explain, the difference between hana'asacha and tovasacha is hana'a is something that's beneficial for you. Tovasacha is good that you will do to be beneficial to others. So it will be beneficial for you, and you will be a better person there. You will do more good there. And Rashi immediately sets about explaining and crystallizing these two concepts. And that's why he brings an explanation of each. In terms of explaining Hana Osecha, the benefit for you, Rashi quotes the next pasuk. There I will make you into a great nation. That's a benefit to you. And with regards to the second expression, ulatovasecha, and your good, how good will you be? Rashi explains, odia tivacha ba'olam. There, I will make your nature known to the world. In other words, people will be more receptive over there to your qualities, and therefore they will be inspired by you to emulate you, and that's tovosacha, that's the good that you will do to inspire others to be better. In fact, the Meshech Chochma translates the final words of the pasuk, El Ha'aretz Asher Ar'eka, to the land that I will show you. So even in English, Lahavdil, depending on how you intone it, when Hashem says, go to the land where I will show you, does that mean, what will Hashem show, and to whom? So we understand that I will show you the land. But Meshech Chochma says, no, when you go there, I will show you, meaning you are actually the object that I will show to others. Odia tivacha ba'ola. So we've managed to downsize the Rashi from saying four things to two things, but even two things is a lot. And, of course, the question ultimately is, why is Rashi saying anything? And the Pasuk says, Lech Lecha, go. And Rashi says, this doesn't only mean go. This means it will be good for you, and you will be good for it. L'na'asacha l'tovasacha. Where is all of that coming from? I mean, the words just say to go. Of course, we see straight away that there seems to be a redundant word in this phrase. The word for go is lech. So lech lecha, that extra word lecha, go for yourself. That seems to be redundant, and that's where Rashi is commenting. Because this lech is lecha. This journey is for you. For you, for your benefit, for your good. So Rashi's commenting on he's addressing the usage of the extra word lecha. That is the simple understanding of Rashi. That is how the Ramban understands Rashi. And in fact, Ramban is unhappy with Rashi's response. And the reason why is because no one knows Rashi better than the Ramban. And Rashi's job, his mission in Chumash, is to respond to pshat issues in the pasuk. If something is glaring, as a pshat concern, something doesn't seem to add up pshat-wise, Rashi will address it. Says Ramban, I know that the Chazal in the Medrash have made this comment of Lech Lecha. They have a much broader net than Rashi does, but in terms of a pshat issue, the extra word Lecha, it's not extra. One shouldn't, a flag doesn't go up with the word Lecha. Because, says Ramban, that's Derech HaMikra. You find throughout the Tanakh, that when things go, or people go, the word, you always have an addition of, or commonly you have an addition of, li, lo, lecha. You find often it says, eilech li, or holach lo. So this is an example of that very frequent phenomenon. Lech lecha. And therefore, the more it's commonly found, the less it stands out, and the less it's an issue that needs to be addressed. Nothing seems to be unusual here. Lech lecha means go. And what about the word lecha? It's not extra. Not api pshat. And therefore, it's a very specific problem that the Ramban has. He doesn't have a problem with the Medrash saying it, because the Medrash can say many things, and Medrash has a much broader scope. His problem is specifically with Rashi. This should not have been in Rashi, because there's no pshat problem here. Well, there are certain Mefarshei Rashi who are not prepared for the Ramban's complaint that Rashi did not need to comment here. Maharal, in the Gur Aryeh, explains why Rashi does need to comment here, why the word lecha is extra here. And even having taken on board everything that the Ramban says, and Ramban says, you know, it's common for the Torah to add, or the Pasuk to add, li, lo, lecha. And therefore, it's not unusual. Says Maharal, it is common, but here it's still unusual. Why? Why is this lecha different than all of the others? Says Maharal in the Gur Aryeh, we need to ask a basic question. Why does the Pasuk ever add these words, li and lo and lecha? I mean, did they never mean anything? Is that the moral of the story? It's just an extra word, but it has no meaning? It must have a meaning. You will find that whenever the word li or lo or lecha are used, when someone or something goes, it it reflects the fact that they had decided to go. That is to say, when someone says, Eilich li el har hamor, that's the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Eilich li el har hamor, or Eilich li el, wherever it is. So that's someone who's made a decision, and therefore it says, li, I will go for myself, meaning I have decided to go, I will make the journey, it's my initiative. That's I have decided to go. So the addition of the word li or lo represents a decision on the part of the one who's going. They go for themselves, meaning of themselves, of their own accord. So that's fine, across the board, but it can't work in the beginning of Lech Lecha. Because to use that interpretation for Lech Lecha is antithetical to what Lech Lecha is. Because Lech Lecha is Hashem telling Avram to go. So someone else can't make the decision for you and still use the extra word Lecha. That's a contradiction, because it's either Hashem's idea or it's Avram's idea. If Hashem tells Avram to go, it's Hashem's idea. So you can't tell someone else to go and say, I want you to make this decision for yourself. And that's why here it's extra, which is very interesting, because what the Maharal is saying is, Don't get too comfortable. As you go through Tanakh and you see li v'lo lecha, stay on guard the whole time, because you may find that in one case it doesn't check out and you'll need to respond. And interestingly, this is also reflected in the world of halacha, because there are certain mitzvahs which are also accompanied with the word lecha or lechem. The Torah says, for example, not too long ago, ulekachtem lechem b'yom harishon, with regards to the arba minim on Sukkot. And as we know, there's a halacha which is derived from the word lachem. One needs to own the arba minim. Mishel lachem, it has to be yours. You can't borrow, not on the first day. And here too, the word lachem must mean more than the standard usage, because it's a mitzvah. The Torah is telling you to do it, so it's not up to you. So the word lachem can't mean what it normally means. Rather, it has a halachic impact, which is Mishel Lachem. There's a lesson here. There's further details of the halacha. You have to own the arba min. So this is the classic response of the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh. Rashi has responded to the pasuk. Ramban said there was no need. We find it all over the place, and it's not a problem. And the Maharal says all over the place is not a problem, but in this place it is a problem, and Rashi addressed it. There is another approach to this Rashi, which is found in the Sefer Maskil Adavid, and it is really quite something. In order to get an appreciation of where Rashi is coming from, why he responds to Lech Lecha the way that he does, we really need to consider the other Lech Lecha that was said to Avram. And that's interesting, because we're not used to having more than one Lech Lecha. I mean, there's Lech Lecha at the beginning of the Parsha. Is there another? There is another. In the final Nisayon of the Akedah, that's how the Akedah begins. Bereishis Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Beis. Kach Masbincha Shechitcha Asher Havta VeLech Lecha El Eretz HaMoria. So that's the lesser discussed Lech Lecha. But the words are the same. It's exactly the same. Lech Lecha. So if you really want to get a full appreciation of Rashi's approach to Lech Lecha here, you've got to see what Rashi says in Lech Lecha over there, and then you'll have the whole picture in front of you. Okay? Well, what's rather disappointing is, if you look at Rashi in Perek Beis Pasuk Beis, on the words Lech Lecha, you'll be looking for a long time, because Rashi doesn't say anything. When I teach this in class, I send the students to the Rashi there. And it takes a while for us to get reorientated. First, I hold out for a bit and demand that they should get a refund for their edition of the Chumash. But ultimately, we can see that there is no Rashi there. But this is highly irregular, because after having made so much out of the first Lech Lecha, one could only imagine what's going to be waiting in the second Lech Lecha. And when we find nothing, so the question is, well, do the words Lech Lecha say Darsheni, or do they not? And if they do, say something in the Akedah. Why does Rashi say nothing? The answer, says the Maskil Adavid, is Rashi agrees with the Ramban. The word Lecha is not extra. And therefore, what's happening at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha is something else entirely. Rashi's response to the expression of Lech Lecha is coming from a completely different place. You see, the expression of halicha, to go, when a person goes from A to B, you will find throughout the Tanakh, the verb lalechet will only ever be qualified by the place that you are going to. No one ever goes from a place. To go from a place is not called lalechet, it's called latzit, to leave. Halicha is always towards somewhere. Classic example, could not be clearer, the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, which really spells it out. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er sheva, in terms of where he went from, he left. Vayelech charana. You can never have a halicha from a place. Now, if that's the case, says Maskele David, we should understand. We're looking in the wrong place when we're trying to figure out why Rashi's commenting here. We're looking at the extra word lecha. That's not the issue. The issue is the word lech. Because there are three places in this pasuk, and all of them are places that Abram is to go from. Me'artzecha, mimoraltecha, mibeisavicha. So if that's true, so let's ask a Lashon HaKodesh question. We're not talking about redundancy, we're talking about correct usage of terms. The pasuk should not have said, lech lecha, the lecha is the least of our worries. It should have said, say lecha. Me'artzecha, mimoraltecha, mibeisavicha. That's a good shiloh. Moreover, we should know that there is no answer to this question, al derech hapshat. I mean, it just breaks the rules. But we should understand, you know, in this light, why when it comes to the second lech lecha, with regards to the akedah, Rashi doesn't say anything. Whatever happened to the extra, there's no extra word. Everything's in order. The lecha at the end is fine, and lech is fine. Because he was called lech lecha el eretz hamariah. He said, everything's in place, he's going towards somewhere. So Rashi doesn't say anything, there's nothing to say. He comments at the beginning of our parsha, because it uses lech instead of tse. And so now the question is, if that's what Rashi is responding to, so what is his response? Again, al derech hapshat, can't be answered. And Rashi's already told us that if he cannot answer with the machinery of Pshat, so he will bring in Drash. And the only way to explain the usage of Lech in terms of Tzei is because now when you look at Lech Lecha, what has changed? Had it said Tzei Lecha, everything would be in order. To change it to Lech Lecha, Al Derech HaDrash, you have two Lechas. The usage of the verb for changing it from Tzei to Lech gives you now what it misses out on in terms of directional correctness, it has gained in terms of now you have two lechas. Lech lecha is darshan as lecha lecha. And if there's two lechas, that explains to us why Rashi actually spells out for us two benefits. Lahan asacha, ulutav asacha. Because this phrase is being darshan as lecha lecha. There's two types of lecha. One for your benefit, and one for your good. So what's interesting is, if it rains, it pours. Meaning, if there's either nothing to say, or there's two things to say. And therefore, Lech Lecha here actually ends up activating, you know, both Lechas to become Lanasacha Urutavasa. So this is a fascinating explanation of Rashi through the Maskele David. And we should know further, just if we wish to be thorough here in our understanding of Rashi, because especially these very innocent-looking Rashis at the beginning of the Parsha, they're the ones that we need to learn especially carefully. You see, later on the word Me'artzecha, Rashi comments, which is actually in Pasuk Beis, he goes back again and comments, Me'artzecha, go from your land. Says Rashi, just a moment, where is Avram's land? His land is Orkastim. I mean, that's where he was born. Now, where is he currently? He's in Haran. In the end of Parshas Noach, Terach move the family from Ur-Kasdim to Haran? So that's an interesting question, says Rashi. Why is Avram being told to leave his land when actually he already left his land? What about that? Says Rashi. V'halo kvar yatza misham. He's already left. Im aviv uva ad Haran. They're already in Haran. Ela kach amalo. Rather, what Hashem says when he says leave your land, referring to Ur-Kasdim, means hisrachek od misham. Distance yourself further. It's not a classic, because you're not there, you've left already, but go further. But same with Beisavich, and leave your father's house. So Rashi, in the subsequent comment, has alerted us to the fact that Avram is being told to move from a place that he's actually already moved from, but he has to move further. Okay. What are the implications now for the use of Lech Lecha? So we understood that Rashi had a problem. The correct phrase should not have been Lech Lecha, it should have been Tzei Lecha, if you're leaving. So Rashi commented, why did it say Lech Lecha? But now that we've seen the subsequent comment, actually, it does make sense for the Torah to say Lech Lecha. The Torah can't say Tzei Lecha, leave, because he's already left. And therefore, we actually, on a pshat level, have a correct, it's appropriate to use the word Lech. Because what do you say to a person who's already left and you want to tell him to keep on going? He can't leave anymore. You can only say keep on going. So Lech Lecha is perfectly in order. So this subsequent comment to Rashi would seem to be the undoing of the opening Rashi. Because there's no problem anymore. So the Rashi on Me'artzecha has pulled the rug out from the Rashi on Lech Lecha. So does that make the Rashi's opening comment now redundant? So the answer is no. And the reason why, and it's rare that we have a case like this, but the reason why is because it's true. The use of Lech Lecha can work al derech ha-pshat because he's already left his country. But Lech Lecha is qualified by three places. Artzecha, Moladetecha, which Rashi understands means his family, and Beis Avich and his father's house. So now we're in a very interesting situation. Has he left his country already? Yes. Has he left his family? No, because his family went with him. Has he left his father's house? No, because his father's house went with him. So actually, the problem that Rashi identifies he's already left is only a problem for one of the three terms. And therefore, the usage of lech as opposed to tsei is one-third appropriate. So it can work al derech hapshat, but it will not qualify all the expressions. So now we have an unusual situation in front of us. We have the pshat approach and the drash approach. What is the plus of each one? The drash has the cost that it's not pshat. But for what it is, it will answer 100% of the equation. The pshat has in its favor that it's pshat, but it's pshat that will cover 33.3% of the issue. And therefore Rashi says, I'll give you both. Because what the drash is lacking in the fact that it's drash, but at least it is a full response to the issue. Bear in mind that there's a pshat response. We should mention it because it's pshat, but it will only qualify Artzecha. Still does not explain Moladetecha Umi Beis Avicha. So one-third pshat or 100% drash. That is the question. So these are the comments of the Maskil David. Again, always reminding us the words of Rashi need to be learned so carefully. The more we look into them, the more we leave Beruchus Gadol, the more we get a sensitivity for the nuance of the way the Torah is speaking. As the Parsha continues, we have the famous war with the four kings and the five kings, that's in Perek Yud Dalet, which Avram amazingly and miraculously defeats the four kings, and they defeated the five kings. And then, Chamishi, Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. So Melech Sedom, who's been keeping a low profile for a while, but now he's back. And Vayomer Melech Sedom al Avram, Ten li ha-nefesh v'rechush kach lach. So he says, if you give me the people, you can keep the rechush. And as we always note, because it's not the last time this happens, he's very open to bargaining because he has nothing. Avram currently has all of this. So that's when Melech Sodom is prepared to talk. It sounds like he's making Avram a great deal, That what he's saying is give me half of what you have. But ha-ruchush kachlach, you keep the ruchush. But vayoma Avram ha-melech Sodom, no harimosi yodi el-Hashem kel elyon k'nei shamayim v'art, no, I raise up my hand before Hashem, imichut v'atzroch, now I'm not going to take a thing. V'mikach mikol ha-shelach. And this was considered to be a very, shalotomar ani yashati yasavram. You shouldn't see I'm the one who made Avram rich. That Avram's holy endeavors couldn't really survive if they weren't funded by Sodom's questionable endeavors. So, but for Avram to say this was considered to be a very great statement. And in fact, there were results, there were dividends. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Chulin, in Daf Peites, that in the Sukkos, in the merit of Avram saying these famous words, in Michut Vatsruchnal, which are actually very difficult al derech hapshat to understand. Because if you talk about from A to B, it sounds like you're representing the cross spectrum of possessions. But a thread and a shoe strap are actually quite near each other. They represent a very thin slice of the cross spectrum of things. So for anything from a chut vatsruchnal, most things are actually outside of that bracket. In any case, so the Gemara says, in the merit of Avram saying Michut Batzrochnal, his descendants were Zoche to two mitzvahs, the Chut of Tcheles, right, of Tzitzis, that's the Michut, Batzrochnal, and the strap, the leather straps of Tefillin. So that's an amazing thing. Now the Meforshim are somewhat bothered by this statement in the Gemara, because Rashi has already identified what seems to be a different, for whatever these concepts mean, but a different cause, a different act that generated the mitzvah of tzitzis. It's actually in last week's parsha, when Noach, when he drank and he lay there in his tent, and Shem and Yefes, but Shem took the initiative more, vayikach Shem vayefes. And Rashi tells us that in the sachar of Shem being the one to take the simla and put it on to cover over Noah, Zochu bonov the talis shal mitzvah. So therefore his descendants got the talis. So it's an interesting situation, because Rashi has identified the source of the mitzvah of tzitzis as Shem. The Gemara has identified the source of the mitzvah of tzitzis as Avram. So what are we to make of this? How do we resolve the situation? So we should know that there are those who say, interestingly, that each one supplied a different component of the mitzvah of tzitzis, because actually, there are two parts. One couldn't say it any more simpler. There's the beged, there's the talis itself, and there are the tzitzis, and between the two of them, you can't have tzitzis without both of those things. And we find that last week, what Shem's area of involvement was with the simla, was with the blanket. And Rashi says, therefore, his descendants merited talis shel mitzvah. The talis part of the equation came from Shem. There were no tzitzis on that talis. I mean, if there were, why would there be? Avram's contribution to the mitzvah came from the word imichut. So the chut is the chut of the tzitzis, which is the tzitzis themselves. And therefore, it's very interesting, because simla plus chut equals talis plus tzitzis, which gives us what we have. Is the mitzvah tzitzis. So that's one approach amongst the Meforshim, that actually each one contributed a different part of the mitzvah. Others say, the Mizrahi actually says, that the Gemara in Chulin is medaktik, that it says that because Avram said in Michut Vatzrochnal, the chut, his descendants merited chut shel tcheles. That's the Loshen of the Gemara. Which, therefore, the Mizrahi says that it could be that were it not for Avram, all the tzitzis would be white. Pardon me, yeah, if it were not for Avram. When Avram came in, what he added to the equation is the added dimension of tzitzis, which is the chut shel tcheles. So, in a sense, the Mizrahi, together with the first approach, what they have in common is that each one sees, you know, Shem and Avram, respectively, as contributing a different component part of the mitzvah. But an entirely different approach to this question is to be found in the Sichos of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. It's a completely different angle. He says, Derech Moshel will understand, if you put a seed in the ground and you want it to grow, you want it to develop into something much greater, so what do you need? Well, You need a few things. I mean, you need the seed, but you need the soil, and you need the sunlight, and you need the water. I mean, there's a few things that come together. There's a few factors, and in confluence with each other, you will get the result. Says Reb Chaim, these mitzvahs, as they are kind of coming into the world, the way that they do, so they are also plantings in that way. Which means that you should not be surprised if you find that Shem is accredited, you know, with the merit of his descendants getting a mitzvah, because what that means is that Shem provided the seed. But that doesn't mean that it would have come to fruition, that it would have developed, had Avram not come in and added another thing. In other words, it needs to develop. Avram gives the sunlight, or the water, or whatever it is, which means that, in a sense, he's contesting the basis of the question. Because we're no longer saying, well, how can you say that Avram is responsible, Shem is responsible, and that you need to divide up the mitzvah? No. Even if there's only one result, very often, to get one result, you need more than one factor. And the proof being, by the way, says Reb Chaim, that we have mentioned that the descendants of Shem, they merited the talis of tzitzis. Well, how many of the descendants of Shem? Most of them do not have tzitzis. They're all descended from Shem. What that means is that what they have is only the input of Shem. But that's not enough. That may be the seed. But none of their ancestors supplied any more input to the equation, and therefore it stopped there. Which means the only descendants of Shem who actually have the result of the talis are those who are descended not only from Shem, but from Shem through Avram, who added the further nutrients to the mitzvah, which then give them the result of the talis. And therefore, says Reb Chaim, don't look somewhere else in the mitzvah for each one's input. It is a composite input to give you the result of that mitzvah. And the truth is, this is a concept that we find elsewhere as well. In Chazal, the Gemara in Bav Metzia and Daf Peivav Amud Beis, when it talks about the beginning of next week's parsha, Vayera and Avraham Avinu, he's running here and there. They're called Paslechem, will get them water, and then they should get he'll get the water and bread, and he puts them under the shade. And the Gemara says, in the Sahar of all these three things, his descendants merited in their time of need in the Midbar, because he says Ve'kha Paslechem. So he got bread for them, so they received lechem min hashamayim. The man is in the schus of Avram's bechapas lechem. And because he said, yukach na ma'at mayim, so his descendants got water. And because he says, vishon utachas eitz, he put them under the shade of the tree, his descendants got the shade of their nane hakavod. And interestingly, the Gemara goes so far as to say that out of those three things, the one that he didn't do personally, namely water, he says, yukach na ma'at mayim. Someone can get water from you. He didn't go to get it himself for whatever reason, but that also expressed itself in his descendants, because the attaining of water for the Jewish people was always more problematic than anything else. The man fell from the sky, and then HaKavod, they were there. Water had to be taken out of the rock, and sometimes it didn't work out so well at all. And the Gemara actually traces that back to the indirect way that Avram himself gave the water to the guests. On the other hand, the Gemara says in Maseches Tanis and Daf Ches that these three aspects, the man and the be'er and the anani hakovet, they came in the schus of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Shlosha roim hane'emonim. The man in the schus of Moshe and the be'er shel Miriam. And the anani hakovet in the schus of Aaron. And again, one would be leading towards that question, well, why is it a contradiction in the Gemara? In one place, the Gemara says that we got those things in the merit of Avram. Elsewhere, the Gemara says we got those things in the merit of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. But once again, says Reb Chaim, we should not be disorientated by this. Because we find that what began, the process that began, and the input that began with Avram, was further developed through Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, until we get the result of the Be'er, the Man, and the Anani HaKovet. So, this is the results of this famous statement of Avram, Imichut ba'atzrochna. What's interesting to consider is the way that Avram prefaces his words. He's Vayomer Avram pasuk kaf beis Vayomer Avram amelach Sodom. Harimosi adia l'Hashem keil elyo kornei shamayim v'aretz. I raise up my hands to Hashem. What does that mean? It sounds like, and I think this is the straightforward understanding, it's a kind of an expression of a shavua. Like he raised up his hands, he's about to make a solemn declaration. Harimos yadiel Hashem kel elyon. And this leads certain mefarshim to ask a very interesting question. Why is he making such a solemn declaration? And the background to the question is, when do you make an emphatic statement like that? If you know that there's going to be, let's say, pressure on you to act a certain way, and you wish to resist, so at a certain point you'll make a big statement. I raise up my hand, I won't take anything. Now, without putting too fine a point on it, if Avram says no to Melech Sodom's offer to keep the Rechush, it's unlikely that the king of Sodom will insist. And he's not going to ask him a second time. In fact, he's probably hoping that Avram will say no. He doesn't want. He sees this as the path of least resistance out of a difficult situation. His entire population is currently under the control of Avram, as well as all of his wealth. So he cuts his losses and says, listen, you know what, you keep the wealth. Avram says, you know, it's okay, you keep the wealth. Okay, I mean, he's not going to argue the point. So Avram doesn't need to make a shavua about it. I don't think that if Avram hadn't made a shavua, the king of Sodom would have refused and says, no, until you take a shavua, I'm not accepting it back. What do you mean? He's already given you the bank account number. So as soon as you say no, he's happy with no. That's an interesting shaila. What's behind the expression, Harimos yadiel Hashem kel elyon? And another question which is asked by the Maral Diskin is that Avram is concerned. You shouldn't say, Ani he'esharti Yosefam, I made Avram rich. How could the king of Sodom say that he made Avram rich? If he took his possessions and gave them to Avram, so he made Avram rich. But Avram has come into possession of all those things. It wasn't because it has nothing to do with the king of Sodom. Avram owns all of this. So there doesn't seem to be a danger of the king of Sodom saying, you know, everything he got from me, he didn't get it from you. It was taken from you by those four kings. He conquered those four kings. He came into possession of it. He didn't get it from you. You're not the benefactor here at all. So Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin alerts us to another element in play here. Namely, we find that there exists a concept of kibush milchama, of spoils of war. There exists such a thing. However, in a situation where the conquest came about via a miracle, there can be no spoils. There can be no taking of any of the of those possessions. Because that's considered taking advantage of a miracle. It's left almost as pirsume nisa. As this is such a miraculous thing, so any of the spoils are off limits. It is for this reason that when Jericho was conquered, unlike any of the other cities, there was a specific directive not to take any of the spoils. And of course, that was a tragic situation with Achan, who took something and he shouldn't have taken. But this only existed by Jericho. It did not exist by any of the other cities. Well, how is Jericho different? The answer is because Jericho was taken in a different way. The other cities were taken in a war. Jericho was taken by blowing a shofar. And the walls came down. It's somewhat unconventional. And in response to that, all of the shalal was off limits. Such a type of war is the one that was waged by Avram. However you learn how many people went with him, a maximum of 318, and if you look in Rashi, you'll see that it's basically one person because Eliezer has a gematria of 218. It's either 318, the numerical value of one person, and even if it's 318 people, his Talmidim. With that, he went to war against four seasoned armies who had already defeated five other armies and won. I mean, just even logistically, just in terms of being, how many places can one be in? So this conquest is a miracle from beginning to end. He's pursuing them in all different directions. And that's why he's not prepared to take. In other words, when the king of Sodom says, you keep the Rechush, you know, maybe you deserve it. I mean, you're the conqueror. Avram Avinu says, I'm not taking anything. And he prefaces by saying, Harimosi adi el Hashem kel elyon. Now, what is the meaning of those words? So we understand Harimosi adi means I raise up my hands. It's an expression maybe of a shavua or something like that. But the Maral Diskin says that Avram Avinu isn't just prefacing a statement by emphasizing. He's explaining why he's not going to take. He says, this is off limits for me. Because the way that I won the war wasn't through normal military might. I raised up my hands to Hashem. Harimosi yodi is a past tense. I raised up my hands to Hashem. I lifted up my hands in tefillah. And he answered me. So if that's the nature of the war, so then I do not naturally have a claim on the spoils. And what's interesting is, this seems to be maybe a rather uncommon translation of these words. This is how Unkelus translates these words. On the words, Harimosi yadi el Hashem kel elyon, says Unkelus, Aremis yadi bitzolo is tefillah, tiskabot tzolosoho nuvauson. I raised up my hands in tefillah before Hashem, who owns everything. That's how I won the war. So this explanation of the Maral Diskin is black and white in Unkelus. And therefore, in terms of a natural claim, I don't have, because it was an unnatural victory. It's like Yericho. The only alternative would be to say that even though I don't deserve it, and it reverts back to you, but you're prepared to give it to me. So to that, Avram says, no, I don't want you to give it to me. Shilotomar ani hesharti es Avram. So a natural claim to it I don't have. It naturally reverts back to you. And if you're going to give it to me anyway, I don't want to accept it from you, because I don't want you to give me that money. You'll say, Ani Hesharti Es Avram. Because in that case, it will be a gift from you. So this is a very interesting biur. Again, these words that we're so familiar with, Harimosi Yadi, etc. and so forth, the more we look into them, the more we see. I'd like to spend the last segment here discussing what is probably the most difficult section of the parsha, which is the Bris Bein HaBesarim in Perek Tesvav. Now, nothing about the Bris Bein HaBesarim is straightforward. Which means the good news is if we hear Chidushim, we shouldn't be alarmed because we have no choice. What happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in, if we just see the Psukim, just to see what we're dealing with, Pasuk Zayin, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Elav, Ani Hashem, Asher Tzitzichu Mir Kastim, I am Hashem, I took you out of your Kastim, Laseis Lecha Es Haaretz Hazos Lerishta, to give you this land to inherit it. And Avram responds and says, Vayomar, Hashem Elokim Pamo'idah Ki'ir Hashanah, how will I know? How will I know that I will inherit it? Now, the simple understanding is that Hashem has promised Avram the land, and Avram is asking, well, how do I know that will happen? Now that itself needs to be understood. And again, continuing the simple understanding, Avram was taken to task for this, and Yadoa Teida, his descendants will go into exile, and etc. A couple of simple questions. Number one, Avram throughout the parsha, actually in this juncture, is promised two things. You see, in Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayotzeyos HaChutza, Avram has no children. And he is now 99. Just actually, that is unknown for us. But sometimes it's something between 75 and 99, depending on where you rate the war. But in any case, advanced in years, hasn't had children yet. Hashem says, Vayom HaBet No Shamayma. Look at the sky. Count the stars if you can. So you currently don't have children, but you will. Your descendants will be numerous as the stars. How does Avram respond? He believes Hashem. And that's not a chiddush. In fact, the problem is, why does the pasuk even say that? Because Hashem told him, of course he believes. So when descendants were promised him, even though he currently has no children, when the land was promised him, Avram says, how do I know if that will happen? Why is he only uncertain or searching for confirmation for the promise of the land and not for the promise of descendants? Especially as the promise of the land has no meaning if he has no descendants. So which is more of a priority concern for him? It's going to be his descendants. And Hashem says, you don't have children, but you will. And Avram says, okay, that's fine. I don't need any confirmation. When it comes to the land, how do I know? Another question that is raised by Mefarshim is, we should know specifically the land of Eretz Canaan, later to become Eretz Yisrael, has been promised to Avram already twice in the Parsha. The very beginning of the Parsha, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Zayin, Hashem appears to him as soon as he comes to Eretz Yisrael. I will give you this land. What does Avram do? Builds him his Be'ach. Fantastic. Later on, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Tesvav, after Lot has gone his separate ways, Hashem appears to him again. I give it to you, I'll give it to your descendants. Fantastic. The third time, which is in our Parsha, Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land, and Abram says, well, how do I know? So the question is, well, how did you know the first two times? Why were you not anxious? Why did you not ask for some type of sign, or whatever the words Bama Ida mean? The first two times Hashem said it, and Abram accepts it. And the third time Hashem says it, and Abram says, Bama Ida. That's a good sign. The response to Avram's question is obscure in the extreme. Because when Avram says in Pasuk Ches, Bama'ida ki irashena, Hashem says, okay, here's what to do. Kali egla mishuleshes, take the egla, take a calf, ve'ez mishuleshes, and a goat, ve'ayel mishulesh, and a ram, v'tor v'gozal. That's the answer to Avram's question. Except, how is it an answer? Avram's saying, how do I know? And Hashem says, take these animals. I mean, how is that answer the question? And Rashi has given two explanations, but each one based on Chazal. One has to say something, and this is a response to Avram's question. So Hashem tells Avram that his descendants will be Geri Azaracha, Beret Lahem. They will be enslaved, and they'll be persecuted. And Pasuk Tetzayim, V'dor Revi Yashuvahin, the fourth generation will come back. Now the question is, fourth generation from where? Or from when? Because we know that from Avram, the fourth generation did not come back. I mean, if you just rate the generations, if Yitzchak, Yaakov, and then the Shvatim, I mean, the sons of the Shvatim are the fourth generation, and they, I mean, died in Mitzrayim. Their grandchildren came back, but that's not Dor Ravi, that's Dor Shishi. So, what does all this mean? So these questions and many others are asked, all discussed by the Abarbanel, actually in two places, in his Perush on the Chumash, and also in his Perush on the Haggadah. At a certain point in the Haggadah, he says, an appreciation of the Haggadah will not go any further unless we have an important discussion about the Bris Ben HaBesarim, and he devotes 20 pages to Bris Ben HaBesarim before getting back to the Hisha Amda or whatever it is. See, what's behind the question, Avram's question of Bama Eda Ki Irashena, says Abarbanel, there was nothing wrong with that question. It was a perfectly fair question. And here's the background. We find that the various promises that Avram received for the land shift in terms of who exactly is meant to receive the land. Because if we go back over the psukim that we quoted, the first time the land is promised, which is in Perek Yud Beis, Hashem appears to him, Vayomer, Lezarecha etines ha'aretz hazos, I will give this land to your descendants. Now the implication is that the land will be given to Avram's descendants, but not to Avram. Okay. The second time, after Lot leaves him in Perek Yud Gimel, Hashem says, look around in all the directions, all the land that you see, Lecha etnena ulezarecha. I'll give it to you and your descendants. So apparently, the giving of the land already starts with Avram. And moreover, in two psukim time in Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, ki lecha etnena, which refers only to Avram. So we have all combinations. The first time it's to Avram's descendants, then to Avram and his descendants, and then finally to Avram. Now, so the question is the land to be given to Avram? And moreover, if it is to be given to Avram, does that demand anything of Avram? Because for the land to be given, then maybe that means he needs to assume control. Now, that's an issue that never came up, says Abarbanel, until now. Because what happened just now, for the first time, and for other reasons, is that Avram went to war. And he waged a war within Eretz Canaan, and he took over certain territories. Now, the inception of that war was family. It was Lot. Vayishba Avram ki nishba achiv, and whatever happened, happened. But at this point, Avram is no longer sure whether he should perhaps continue. Because Hashem tells him sometimes that the land will be given to his descendants. If it's given to his descendants, then he doesn't need to take any action to take control of the land, because it's not been given to him. But other times it said it's been given to him. If it's been given to him, maybe he's got to do something about it. And perhaps circumstances, quote unquote, that forced him into war, maybe that he should continue that way in order to be, because he's seen amazing success. And maybe he's meant to take over, as surely as in the fullness of time his descendants ended up taking over. And that's his question. Because when Hashem promises that this is the land, he says again, in this perek, perek tesvav, Ani Hashem asher tzichem yokasem laseis lechais ha'aretz hazos l'rishta, to give you the land. And it, once again, it sounds like it's Avram. So Avram at this point was already wondering, maybe when Hashem says he's going to give me the land, that maybe that I should take it. But other times he said it's to my descendants. So when will the time of takeover take place? And that is Avram's question. Vayomer pasuk ches Hashem Elokim b'mo eida ki irashena. Now the word ki we normally translate as, you know, that. How do I know that I will? But the answer to that, says Abba, is because Hashem told you. I mean, that's not the question. The word ki, a parallel meaning of the word ki, is when. Like ki sovo el aretz, ki seite la milchama. Says Abba, the question of Avram is, how will I know when to take possession of the land? Because I keep on getting different messages. Is it me? Is it my descendants? I've gone to war. Should I keep on the war? Should I stop? Should I retire? Should I engage? Should I take over the land now? And the answer is no. But how does the answer come out? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows the response to Avram with these three animals. Now, those three animals, the calf and the goat and the ram, so they actually are killed in this bris, right? Because and then the different pieces are put in different places. And then you have two birds, which actually are sent away, which are not killed. Vesatzipor lo vasar. Who are these? Who are these three animals, right, who kind of do not make it out of the bris ben habasarim alive, but then there's two birds who do, and how is this an answer to Avram's question? Says Abarbanel, the three animals are the three avos. And moreover, there exists a specific connection between each of those animals and the Av. Avram is connected to the Egel, Vayikach Avram ben Bakar, right, what he took in his famous act of Chesed. Yitzhak is connected to the Isle, Elosh of Yitzhak, and Yaakov is connected to the Eis, right, because he got the brachas through the skins of the Gedei Izim. And therefore, these three animals, they kind of stay there, and they don't really survive the Bris Ben HaBasarim. Because what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is intimating to Avram is that this will not happen in your lifetime. Rather, there are two others who will be in charge of giving the land to Bnei Yisrael. The Torah and the Gozal in the future. They're birds, right? That's distant future. That's Moshe and Yehoshua. And the reason why, and this now is a very big chiddush from Abarbanel, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this point tells Avram that your descendants will go into Golos. Now, we normally understand that the going into Golos was a reaction to Avram's question. It was caused by Avram's question. Says Abba Benel, I don't think so. Because I don't think Avram did anything wrong by asking his question. He's just asking, when will they inherit the land? Because he gets so many different messages. So there's nothing wrong with his question. And the Golos isn't as a result of his question. Avram is not at fault here for asking Bama Eda. And proof being, says Abarbanel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him explicitly in Pasuk Tes Vav, Va'ata tavo esecha b'shalom, you will leave this world in peace. Avram is assured that everything will be fine with him. If he is the reason for the Golos, so how come everyone except for him is experiencing the galus, and he's fine. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu emphasizes, "Vatata v'olosecha b'shalom," you'll be fine. If he's going to be fine, he can't be the reason behind the galus of his children. Famous pasuk in the Navi, "Avos yochlu bosar v'shinei bonim tekena." What? It's the fathers that eat the sharp fruit, and then it's the teeth of the children that will rot. Right? So if Avram is the problem, and he's dafka fine, and his children will, it's one thing to say that it continues. It starts with Avram and continues. Poked Avon Avos Albon. But it starts with the Avos. But it doesn't start with him, because he didn't do anything wrong. So what's happening here is HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him that his descendants will incur the liability of Golas. It doesn't say why. And of course it doesn't say why. Because if Hashem will tell him why, that is the point that we have questions of predetermination and free will that cannot be resolved. We find in the Tanakh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell a Navi that people will sin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it to Moshe. In the end of Vayelech, he says, "Hin you will pass away, and your descendants will worship Avodah Zarah." They will. So does that mean that they have no choice? But Hashem doesn't say who, when, what. But we do find in a general way HaKadosh Baruch Hu does say that something bad will happen. Here too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't tell Avram what is the cause for the galus. It's not Avram, but you need to know a galus will happen, because if you're wondering, does the Yerusha of the land take place from now? It doesn't. Not until that issue, which has not yet happened, will happen and then be resolved. And it's not your problem, but that's what's holding up the Yerusha Sa'aret. And what is the problem? Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say to Avram. He can't tell Avram what the problem will be, because then the problem will have to happen. But if you read the rest of Chumash Bereishis, says Abba Arbanel, you'll know what the problem is. The brother sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. And that's why they needed that galus in order to deal with that issue before they could come back as a people and inherit Eretz Yisrael. The Abba Arbanel holds that the reason for Golas Mitzrayim, being sold into slavery, is selling Yosef into slavery. That's what it's all about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to tell Avram that your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, will sell one of their brothers into slavery. That type of detail can't happen before the fact. But after the fact, looking back, he was sold to Mitzrayim and everybody else ended up there as well. And indeed, there are many, many parallels between the chait of Mechiras Yosef and Golas Mitzrayim. And the truth is that this begins before the Abba Arbanel. There's a Medrash Tehillim which says explicitly that Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Shvatim, they sat down and they sold Yosef as a slave. Hashem says to L'Shvatim, you sold your brother as a slave. Chayechem shekol shona atem omrim avodim hayinu. You will every year, you'll go through an experience that you'll commemorate every year and say that you yourselves were slaves. So this is what was behind it. And again, it's a closed box for Avram. But the tachlis is, They're not going to inherit the land until they recover from that. And interestingly, Golas Mitzrayim was not only a punishment for Mechiras Yosef, but it was also an antidote for Mechiras Yosef. It was some form of response, of recovery. And the reason why is because on whatever level it happened, the ill feeling, the division between the brothers, which was responsible for the sale of Yosef, those divisions disappeared when they were all targeted as one people. Against the oppression, there was no denominational discrimination between them. No one says, you're from that brother, so we'll let you off easy. As if you were Jewish, you had a problem. And therefore, when all the Jewish people had a problem, their problems between them tend to fade away, which they still do. And therefore they were forged together as a people through Golas Mitzrayim, and as a people they're able to come back. But that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the famous, "Begames HaGoy Asher Yavodu Dan Anochi," also the people that will serve them, I will judge. So the Mefarshim asks, what is also? Also as well as whom? I mean, it's only that people. How can you start with Vegam? Vegam means in addition to. In addition to whom? Says Abba Arbanel, in addition to the Jewish people themselves. The first people that will go through punishment in Mitzrayim are the Jewish people. They're being judged for what they did to Yosef. Vegam, but don't think that lets the Egyptians off the hook. Also, they will be judged for what they do to the Jewish people. And the door of Eve, Shuvahena, is the door of Eve from those that go down to Mitzrayim, which is Yehuda, Chetzron, Peretz Chetzron, and Kalev. Kalev was the door of Eve from that critical time. So these are some of the themes that the Abarbanel sees within Bris Ben Abesarim. The questions that are raised are very, very important questions. His answers incorporate certain chidushim, which is his right. He is the Abarbanel, and certainly a great deal to think about in this Bris Ben Abesarim, which is it contains within it all of the Goliaths, the Eima, Chashecha, Gedola, Nefeles, are the four Goliaths, and that's why the promise for redemption, if Golas Mitzrayim contains within it all of the four, then the promise to be redeemed from Mitzrayim contains within it the code for redemption from all Goliaths. That's why we say V'hisha Amdu L'Avraseinu V'lanu. That promise of Acharechein Yetzu was not only L'Avraseinu, but also V'lanu. We look forward to that happening soon. Emheri Amenu.